Hi, everybody. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic. And by God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am eternally grateful. I just wish you could be where I am. It's like, wow. Wow. There are not words to describe the honor that I feel being invited to speak at this conference. I absolutely love women, and it's been the women in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous who have saved my life. And to have you... to have the honor to be able to stand here at an international conference for women is just beyond my greatest expectation. I was asked to do this about 2 years ago, and it was so long, it was so far away, and that it didn't even seem real. And as the time got closer and closer, I have just been overwhelmed, and I just thank the committee and especially Peggy for having so much confidence in me to be able to invite me to do something that's this special. Thank you so much. When I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not have a God that even resembles the God I have today. And in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is where I found God of my understanding. Because before coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am not only a recovering alcoholic and drug addict, I am a recovering Southern Baptist. And I can. And one of the things that I'd like to tell you is I don't have anything against the Baptist Church, and I'm not here to do any kind of bashing of churches or bashing of other programs. I'm just going to report to you my experience. But I had a lot of old ideas before coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I've learned since being here is that those ideas were mostly a creation of my own sick mind. Because I have a disease of perception. And I'm one of these people that does a lot of listening to tapes. I do a lot of commuting in my car, and I love the people who do the taping for us, because without those tapes, many of us would sit, you know, and long hours and not have anything good to do. And what I do is I listen to tapes. And not too long, oh, it's been probably about 7 or 8 years ago, I heard a tape by Clancy. And that tape has absolutely changed the course of my life and thinking. And that tape is called Alcoholism, a Disease of Perception. And what I have learned is that I have a disease of perception. My perception of reality is distorted. I do not perceive the world the way it really is. And I can still hear my mother when I was a little girl, and she would say things like, "Polly, wherever did you get that idea? Nobody said that to you." And I really know today that that's true. But I would have sworn on everything I had that what I was thinking was the truth. And today I know that I've got the kind of head that you can put information in my head, it takes a walk around, and what went in doesn't even look like what comes out. I mean, it doesn't even resemble it. That's why I need to suit up and show up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I need you to keep me in touch with the truth. Now, I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Now, if you're anything like me, it's apt to piss you off first, but it definitely will set you free. Anyway, I had a lot of old ideas about this Baptist church, and I would carry these ideas into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And those ideas absolutely devastated me and devastated my life prior to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you see, these preachers would get up in my head, this is what I saw, behind these podiums, and they'd slam their fist on the podium and their face would get red and their veins would stick out, and they'd lean into the congregation and they'd say things like, "If you thought it, you've done it." Now, I don't know about any of you, but I was an alcoholic in the making, and I thought a lot. So what I began to do is take on the attitude is I'll never be good enough for God, and I'll never, ever be good enough for these people. There's no way I will ever, ever be enough. And I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you told me about a God. Because you see, the God I had lived somewhere out in the sky. And you had to go through those people to get to God. But in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says that God is deep within. And it tells me how to find God. And it says to search fearlessly. And today, God, as I understand Him, expresses Himself to me through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I don't know about any of you, but God has never sent me a fax. So I need you to tell me about God. And I truly believe what Chuck Chamberlain said, if I knew better, I'd do better. And I need you to tell me when I'm not doing better. Because you see, I believe that everybody on planet Earth is doing the very best that they can do. And if I didn't have you to help me, I wouldn't know how to do it differently. And I'm so grateful to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, because you didn't come here wanting me to belong to a popularity contest. You wanted to save my life. And for that, I'm truly grateful. I have a higher power who's got an absolute dynamite sense of humor, and I'd like to share that with you. My name is Polly. It's not Pauline or Paula, it's Polly. Now, if you're a little girl and your name is Polly, you're going to be teased a lot. And it's going to be things like, Polly wants a cracker, Polly Wally Doodle all the day. Now, I don't know about any of you, but I'm sensitive. Now, I don't like to be laughed at, and I don't like to be teased. But what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is there's just no negatives in God's world. It's just my perception that's negative. Everything has a positive result. And today I love having the name Polly, because there's 1,000 people here, and I'd almost bet I'm the only Polly. So when somebody says Polly in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. I didn't know I had a disease called alcoholism. I knew that I was a drunk, and I knew that I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and I used to pray to God to have heart disease or cancer or something, because I knew that I was dying and I just wanted to die of something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift, because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I am or hope to be, I owe to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. 14 and a half years ago, I married Dave. Dave's last name is Pistol. My name is now Polly Pistol. I will assure you that you cannot walk around on planet Earth with a name like Polly Pistol and not learn to lighten up. I'm really grateful. I am also living, breathing proof that you can come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and not come from alcoholic parents. I do not come from the disease of alcoholism. Now, I've been told in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, take an alcoholic's family tree, give it a shake, and an alcoholic will fall out. Now, that alcoholic probably is my mother's father. But from my recollection, this man never, ever drank like me. So I don't know if he was an alcoholic. The only thing is that I know that I did not grow up around alcohol. My father died when he was 60 years old, and he had 60 years of sobriety. My mother is 77, and she has 77 years of sobriety. And I want you to know without a doubt that my mother is not the least bit impressed with my almost 18 years of sobriety. I don't know if you have whiners in your groups, but I was definitely one of those. I also say I am a recovering whiner. But I used to go into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I would whine. My parents will never know about my friends. My parents will never come and give me a cake in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just whined on and on and on. But thanks to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you have helped me to understand that my mother doesn't understand. And for that, I am so grateful. I'll tell you another little story about my mom. She lives in a little bitty town in West Texas. And it's 40 miles north of Abilene. And I fly into Abilene, and that's where she picks me up. And my mother will say the same thing to me when I go there as she says every time I go there. And she'll say, "Now, honey, you don't need to let anybody know you're an alcoholic." We have a set of traditions around here. And when I go to Stamford, Texas, I don't need to let anybody know I'm an alcoholic. Because, you see, if I did that, I would break my mother's anonymity. So, I'm grateful today. When I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you started to tell me to identify with the feelings. And I began to do that. And when you would stand up and behind the podium and talk about your alcoholic mom or your alcoholic dad or sit in a meeting, I began to be able to identify. Because, you see, I believe with all my heart the only difference between my dad and I is my dad just forgot to take a drink. Everything else was there. My father was a man who was full of rage. And my father used to have fits of rage, just like a periodic alcoholic. You never, ever knew when Daddy would have one of his fits, as my mother called it. And every time my daddy had one of his fits, I always thought it had something to do with me. Had I just been better or done better, then Daddy wouldn't have had one of his fits. And I would look at my father, and I would say the same things to my father that I've heard you say about your alcoholic father. And I'd say, "There's no way I'll ever be like you." And the irony of it was, I became just like him. And I'd look at my mother and I'd say, "You're such a wimp. Why don't you stand up for yourself? How can you let him treat you like that? I'll never be like you." And the irony of it was, I became just like her. And I believe that the disease of alcoholism is a disease of negativity. Because there were wonderful, positive things that happened to me in my life. But it seemed like the only thing that I remembered was the negative things. And I became the worst of both my parents. I became an angry wimp. One of those people who's just full of rage, but can't stand up for themselves. You know, what are these people when somebody hurts your feelings say, "Oh, Polly, I'm so sorry, did I hurt your feelings?" "Oh, no." That's okay. And I've learned in the rooms at Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever goes down's gonna come up. And when it would usually come up is when I was with my two little boys. And I took all my anger and rage out on my two little boys. I'm so grateful to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous that I have been able to make amends to my sons and I've been able to face myself because, you see, thanks to you, I was able to face my sons and say that I am a child abuser. And because of a disease called alcoholism, I traumatized my children. But this program has given me a way out. Thanks. I'm so grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because what you've taught me here is that I have a disease and it's spiritual in nature. Because you see, the truth is I am an only child. And if ever there was any abuse that was done to me, that abuse was is that I was simply loved too much. Because you see, my parents not only loved me, they absolutely adored me. But because I have a disease, and it's spiritual in nature, I never ever knew that until I came to this program. Because you see, when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have sworn that nobody loved me. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I am suffering from a spiritual malady. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I am cut off from the sunshine of the Spirit. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me when you are suffering from a spiritual malady, nothing is enough. There was no way that my parents could love me enough, could give me enough, or do enough. I'm so grateful for this program that today I know that I was always loved. The only person in my life who has never, ever been on my side was me. Everybody else has always been on my side. Now, I know that that's not everybody's story, but that's my story. And I heard a fellow talk at our home meeting last Monday night, and this man said, he says, you know what you see in Alcoholics Anonymous? You see the people who weren't loved enough and the people who were loved too much. And I'm a person who was loved too much. I am a person that has always felt rejected. And I love what Clancy says. Clancy says that we are people who have to be treated special just to feel average. And if you don't treat us special, then we feel rejected. And I totally understand that. I was always a person that had to be treated special. I am so grateful today for a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was 2 years sober when my daddy died. And when my daddy died, I was the kind of daughter I always wanted to be. And I was a help to my mother. And I understood my dad, because you see, I understood that he was as powerless over his rage as I was over mine. And today I understand that my mother is not a wimp. My daddy died at 60 years old, and he didn't leave my mother with a lot of money. My mother is 77 years old today, and she works full time. You know, I don't believe wimps do that. Today, my mother is the kind of woman that I want to aspire to. And I'm so glad that you showed me and that you let me see life through a new pair of glasses. Because without you, I would never have ever known. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. I just knew that I had found my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. Well, I had married a SAC pilot, and this man was going to be gone, and he was going to be gone for years at a time. And I was going to have to learn to be responsible for myself. And I can assure you, I have never wanted to be responsible for myself. And I didn't know how to do that. And I don't know what they call it in Omaha, Nebraska, but I tell you what they call it in Port Arthur. You know when you pout? They call it puffing up. You know how you just kind of puff up? And then it's your responsibility to find out what's wrong with me. And then it's your responsibility to make me happy. And if you don't love me. I've never wanted to suit up and show up for life. And I had to learn to do that, and I didn't know how. And at 18 years old, I took a drink of alcohol. It was no big deal. I don't even remember taking it. My story is entirely different from my husband's. He remembers the first drink he took, and he chased that feeling until he found the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. My experience with the drug with alcohol was that it was cunning, baffling, and powerful. It was so insidious that I didn't even know it had me till it had me. I saw a sign in an Alano club that describes my disease, and that sign said, "The chains of alcoholism were too soft to be felt until they were too strong to be broken." I didn't ever know I had it till I couldn't stop. Along about 1962, we're stationed in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. And it's really cold there. The people who live there, the reason Maine's not here is they probably just couldn't get out. And I had these two little boys. And I didn't have a clue how to take care of these children. I had no tools in which to be a parent. And these little boys, I couldn't send them out to play. It was 50 below zero. And these little boys were driving me crazy. And I was having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes. And I went to an Air Force doctor, and they said, "Take these." And from 1962 until 1977, when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I drank alcohol, and I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nimitol. And I'm here to tell you, if you take those kind of drugs, you are not an active alcoholic. I call myself a couch potato alcoholic. I was not a party girl. I did my dying on my living room sofa. I just laid there and watched soap operas and listened to Joan Baez sing the blues. You know how we talk about progressing to the morning drink? I never progressed to the morning drink. I just started with it. You know, because in the Air Force, we went to these little coffees, and I'll guarantee you they served more than coffee. So it was Bloody Marys and screwdrivers in the morning, sherry before lunch, martinis before dinner, and Black Russians and Stingers after. And it never, ever occurred to me that there was anything wrong with my drinking for a very long time. I don't know if any of you have had to do any controlled drinking. But I will assure you that to be drunk and disorderly, if you were an Air Force officer's wife, was not acceptable behavior. And I was tailor-made for this job, I will assure you. I am Texas born and raised, and I have never once heard my mother ask me, "Polly, how do you feel?" My mother would just say, "Polly, you go outside and you put a smile on your face, because what would the neighbors think?" So I never ever knew anything but to look good. And I was tailor-made. I was well-mannered, and I knew how to look good, so I fit the job perfectly. And so going to these cocktail parties, I would have to do controlled drinking. Now, I had no idea what an alcoholic was. I never, ever knew an alcoholic until I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I used to say this, but I can't say it anymore, that all of the people that my ex-husband and I hung around with in the Air Force, none of them were alcoholic and none of them were in AA. I just found out that one of the people has 5 years of sobriety. Now, I will assure you that I don't recall his drinking ever being like my drinking, so he progressed later. But I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I never saw an alcoholic. And I saw these movies of Days of Wine and Roses and I'll Cry Tomorrow, but that didn't mean anything to me. I mean, there's just nothing there. I had absolutely no identification with any of that. So I didn't even know what an alcoholic really was. All I knew was something was wrong with me. And something made me different from those people. And when I took a drink of alcohol, something happened to me that obviously didn't happen to them. So when I would go to a cocktail party, I knew that something was wrong, but I didn't know what it was. And I knew that if I drank too much, that things happened to me. And I didn't understand it. I didn't know anything about blackouts. I just knew that something happened to me. So when I would go to a cocktail party, I would do controlled drinking. I would sip a drink. And I'm telling you right now, that still makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. And I'm here to tell you that a four-hour cocktail party can be a lifetime. And I couldn't wait till I got home and I could drink all I want and pass out. That's about all you're going to hear as far as a drunkalogue goes, because I slept through it. But I would like to tell you some of the things that brought me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If it was 20 minutes to 9, I was passed out on my sofa. I was always passed out on my sofa. And this night, my husband jerked me up and he set me at the kitchen table and he said, "Polly, alcohol and pills are our problem. And if you just wouldn't drink and if you just wouldn't take these pills, everything would be okay." And he started pouring out the booze and he started pouring the pills down the garbage disposal. And I just sort of sat there in my comatose state. And when he was finished, I just went back and laid down. Now, I had taken to drinking things like NyQuil cough medicine, vanilla extract, and Scope, because I smoked about 2 packs of cigarettes at that time in my life. And if you carry a bottle of NyQuil around, nobody asks, because you got a bad cough. I came to about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I knew that I was too sick to go to the 7-Eleven and buy a bottle of NyQuil. And that night, I caught myself crawling around my garage floor, going through the plastic bags to get those bottles and turn them up to just get one drop. I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about the dilemma of the alcoholic, where to drink is to die and not to drink is to die. And I absolutely needed a drink of alcohol or I would surely die. And that night, my husband found me downing a bottle of rubbing alcohol. I absolutely had to drink to live. Shortly thereafter, I had a car wreck in Irving, Texas. And that would bring me to treatment for the first time. And I entered a treatment center, and I will assure you this was no fancy jitter joint. This was a county detox. And I entered this jitter joint, and they started taking us to a lot of AA meetings. And I really loved what I saw in Alcoholics Anonymous. But down deep inside of me, my thought was, people like me do not become alcoholics. And what Dr. Thiebold says is there's two characteristics found in every alcoholic: grandiosity and defiant individuality. And my husband says only an alcoholic can lay in the gutter feeling superior to those up and down. I left that treatment center and I had what we call in Texas a jitter house romance, you know, where sick falls in love with sick and you sail off into the sunset. Well, we stayed sober for 58 days. And I was brought back into that treatment center more dead than alive. And I'd reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because now I knew what the problem was. The problem was sobriety. And I knew that there was no way that I could live sober. I could not live with what had happened to me in that motel room because I had been beaten up and numerous and sundry other things. And I knew that there was no way I could live sober. I couldn't live with the kind of mother I'd become and the kind of wife I'd become and the kind of daughter I'd become. And I've heard in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that men hate what they've done and women hate what they have become. And I hated what I had become. And I just knew I could not live sober. You see, I've just defined the disease of alcoholism. I nearly wrecked my car the first time I put in a tape of Clancy's. And it said, "Alcohol has nothing to do with the disease of alcoholism." And today, I'm so grateful I know that. Because you see, if alcohol were the problem, you and I wouldn't need to be here. Because you see, I'm physically sober for nearly 18 years. But I have a disease, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me, that rests in the mind. And on a daily basis, I must treat the mind. And the way I treat the mind is in recovery, unity, and service. And I love the unity. Because, you see, that's what we get to do tonight. We get to gather up in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the recovery, which is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the service. I believe that our three legacies are like a three-legged stool. You know, a three-legged stool can hold a mighty amount of weight, but remove one leg and the stool falls over. I am so grateful that I had some good teachers in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that made me aware of what it would be like if I was willing to do it all. At any rate, I ended up leaving that treatment center because I knew that there was no way I could stay sober. And I got a bottle of scotch, and I got a bottle of Valium, and I checked into a motel. I am so grateful that we have Eskimos in our lives. And an Eskimo is someone who leads us to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had such a lady in my life. And she knew nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said that day that something came over her. And today I know that something was God working in my life through her. Because she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And she pushed the door open, and she found me laying there. And on April the 8th, of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. As you can well see, that didn't take, because I'm standing here tonight. But I want to share the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know how we'll gather up and go to the meeting before the meeting or the meeting after the meeting, and we all tell our, can you top this story? Well, I didn't have, can you top this story? I came to the program married. I never lost a job. I had all my affairs sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I didn't have one of those, can you top this story? Never had a DUI. So my can you top this story was, I was pronounced dead on arrival. But I had no feeling about that. I was not in touch with God's grace. I was not in touch with the gift of grace. And today I know what grace is. Grace is a gift unearned. I have done absolutely nothing to earn the gift of sobriety. And I will assure you, my friends, I do not think I'm chosen. I do not believe I am the chosen one or the chosen few or the chosen anything. I am just grateful that I today know that I came into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous after three times coming into these rooms. And the third time I got to stay. And I have done absolutely nothing to earn this gift. Anybody who walks through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous is given the gift of grace and the gift of sobriety. I love what it says in our daily reflection in one of our readings. It says, God's gift to me is sobriety. What I do with that gift, with my sobriety, is my gift back to God. You know, there is absolutely not, there is no way I could ever repay Alcoholics Anonymous for what it's given me. I couldn't go to enough meetings. I couldn't sponsor enough people to get back what's been given to me. And it has been freely given to me. And what I'm so grateful about today is that I know it. And that it is a precious gift. And it is only by God's grace. And it is free. I treasure my sobriety more today than I did when I first came, because I will assure you, I have more to lose today than I did 17 years ago. I have so much to lose today that to take a drink of alcohol would absolutely take it all away. I finally ended up in a real fancy jitter joint in Dallas, Texas, on April the 11th. 1977. And I'm so grateful that when I got through with that treatment, that they told me to get busy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they told me to go to a lot of meetings. And I began to go to meetings. And I got a sponsor in those meetings. And I began to do the things that I was told to do. I was told that I was to work with another alcoholic. And I was told that if I only had 30 minutes more sobriety than that other alcoholic, that I was to share that 30 minutes. And just maybe, I'd stay sober. Now, you know, I hear a lot of things in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a lot of what I'm going to share right now is my opinion, and you can do with it whatever you want to. But I can tell you where I am today in my program. I am back to basics. I am doing today the things I did 17 years ago when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been on the search for my inner child. My husband and I both went on our search for our inner child, and I'm here to report to you what I found. What I finally learned is that I know how to be a child. What I am desperately trying to learn how to be is an adult. And some of you younger women will not identify with this, but those of you who are my age will. It's really tough to do adolescence and menopause all at the same time. And I don't say that all that won't work for you. I'm just telling you, it didn't work for me. Because you see, what I found out was, through all of that search, was I found poor Polly. And you see, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that most of my problems are of my own making. And you see, I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous a victim. I was a victim of the Baptist Church. I was a victim of the U.S. Air Force. I was a victim because I was an only child. My God, I was a victim because I was born a woman instead of a man. I thought they had it better. I was a victim. And what I learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is that my problems are of my own making. Thank God. That's the good news. Because what I found out is that if my problems are of anybody else's making, other places or things, I'm screwed. For me to get better, you gotta change. But the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that if I will accept responsibility for my own actions and I change, then it's amazing how much better you look. I was introduced to the steps, and I did them. I did not do them the way they were laid out in the big book until I was 5 years sober. And I had a lot of problems with a higher power. Because you see, while I was in that treatment center, I took one of those four steps. It's like one of those Hazleton four steps, you know, I was born. And I found out that that makes a great novel, but it doesn't do a thing for inventory. And when I did an inventory exactly as it's laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got to that magic fourth column, I got to see what my part is in it. And when I got here, I was told that I needed to be accountable and responsible. And I was to be accountable and responsible for my actions, past and present. And I'm really grateful today for that magic fourth column, because when I found out what my part is in it, I can take responsibility. And like I said earlier, knowing the truth will definitely set you free, but it's apt to piss you off first. When I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, people told me to get into service and to reach out and help another alcoholic. Because you see, if I were to sit around, I don't get some of the stuff I'm hearing today. And one of it is that you've got to love yourself before you can love someone else. You know, if I'd have waited till I loved myself, I'd have never helped another alcoholic in this program. I would have never been able to. It wasn't until I was told to reach out and help another alcoholic. Because, you see, I'm suffering from a spiritual illness. And that spiritual illness, the only way that I can recover from a spiritual malady is to reach out and help another alcoholic. And by reaching out and helping another alcoholic, I was able to help myself. And today I understand what goes around comes around. And you see, what they did is they taught me that in that Baptist church, because they told me, whatever you sow, so shall you reap. And I hear in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, well, I'm taking care of myself. I don't understand all that either. Because you see, when I was taking care of myself, I earned myself a seat in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I started caring about you and started taking care of you, I began to heal from a disease that is hopeless of mind and body. If I sit around and contemplate myself for very long, I get real sick. What I need to do is do everything I can one day at a time to stay out of self. Because my book says that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my disease. And I know that the only way that it works for me is to do what I've been taught in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is to reach out and help another alcoholic. And I truly believe that that is the magic of our program. The absolute magic is one alcoholic helping another alcoholic. Now, I get to have a very special weekend. I have a friend, and she lives in Northern California. And we get together about every 2 years. But we talk on the phone, and now that I'm not intimidated anymore, we talk on the Internet. And I get to spend the weekend with her this weekend. And I'll tell you, when I talk on the phone to Penny, there's a magic that takes place. And that magic is one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. When I call Peggy up and I ask her to help me because I'm in a dilemma, and my AA sponsor doesn't do too good right now, and I'm not about to get another AA sponsor. So I have to reach out to other women in this program, because you see, my AA sponsor has got Alzheimer's right now, and it's time for me to be there for her. So I reach out to other alcoholics, and it's the magic of one alcoholic sharing with another alcoholic. And when that happens, there's just this thing that takes place. That's the beauty of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell you, I wouldn't give that up for all there is. It's the magic. I want to tell you some of the wonderful things that I've received in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was 3 years sober, I married another member of this fellowship. And there's some women in this room that know Dave. And I'm here to tell you, he's the very best in the world. And I'm so grateful to Dave, because you see, Dave has taught me about unconditional love. And it was through Dave loving me that I have been able to heal. I believe that love is a healer. And then where love is present, sometimes some really icky character defects surface. And love is there to heal them. And Dave knew all about me when he asked me to marry him. In fact, he told me, he said, "Polly, you need to get something straight. I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you." And because of his unconditional love, I have been able to love back. Dave and I didn't know anything about having a relationship. We both knew how to take a hostage, but we didn't know how to have a relationship. I knew how to hang into a marriage. I stayed married for 22 years. I knew how to just be there. And Dave kind of liked to marry a lot. So, so we didn't know how to do it. And my first AA sponsor, who's in the big meeting in the sky, said, "Polly, you'll never have any problems in your marriage if you'll treat Dave like a newcomer." And how do we treat newcomers? With love, patience, and tolerance. And then as Dave and I were married longer and, you know, more, you know, after some of the intensity wears off, we began to look at some other things, and we didn't know how to have, you know, how to deal with those things. And my AA sponsor and her husband, until Red died about 6 months ago, had 30 years of marriage. And Ellen has 37 years of sobriety, and Red had 32 years of sobriety. And I wanted what they had, and I began to do what they do. Then Dave and I had the opportunity to meet a couple from Omaha. And that couple began to talk about working the traditions in your relationship. So Dave and I went home, and we took up the traditions, and we began to apply those to our relationship. And we looked at each other and we said, you know, what a concept. We hear in every meeting that the traditions are to the group as the steps are to the individual. And what I've learned about the traditions is if you work the traditions in any relationship, then there's no reason to have a problem with any relationship. And one more time, the answer was in the big book. Dave and I have had gifts beyond our greatest expectation. And a couple of years ago, we had some challenges come down. Now, 6 months ago, if I were standing behind this podium, I would have been doing the things that I was taught to do in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is, when you go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you carry the solution. If you're talking problem, you do that one-on-one with a sponsor. But when you're in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, you carry the solution. And there's sometimes you just act as if. And that's what I would have been doing. But I'm here to tell you today, it's kind of like Martin Luther King said, you know, I've climbed the mountain, and I'm on the other side. And what I can see today is that alcoholism is a disease of perception. And it was only my perception that made it look like it wasn't good. See, my husband lost his job. And at first, Dave and I didn't think too much about it. I mean, you know, here's a highly educated computer scientist. He's not going to have any trouble finding a job. And then what we found out was the world simply was not interested in a 57-year-old computer scientist. And life started to get hard, and it became real obvious if something didn't happen quick, we were going to lose our home. Well, it didn't happen quick, and we lost our home. And I just thought that, you know, I'm sitting around saying, you know, how can this be happening to me? This is supposed to happen to newcomers. This does not happen to people who have, at the time, we had 16 and 17 years of sobriety. That is not what's supposed to be happening. And that was my perception. Well, you know, on the other side of this, it ain't a bad deal. A newcomer comes in whining, you know, and they're saying, oh, my God, we're about to lose our house. And it's like, sweetheart, sit down. I've been there, and I've done that. And you will not go crazy, and you will not die. And if you keep suiting up and showing up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, you will not drink. Sandy Beach says something that I heard when I first came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I really didn't understand it. He said, you know, we come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and our receivers are broken. We do not know how to receive love. And you know what? I really was not aware how badly my receiver was broken. Because, you see, Dave and I were put in positions that we weren't used to. You see, if we were invited out to dinner, we couldn't pay. So people were paying for us, and we used to be the one paying. But I learned a valuable lesson, that if you're the one always doing the giving, you're always in control. But if you're the one doing the receiving, you're very vulnerable. And I was really grateful for the opportunity to receive. And today, I know something that I'm so grateful I know, and that is that I am loved. And you see, I always wanted to know that. I always was loved. I just didn't know it. And God's got a great sense of humor, because we lost that house, but now we're in a house. We have twice the house for half the money. No bad. No big deals. No bad deals. Dave and I are two different people. Dave's one of these kind of guys that likes to, you know, go out in the mountains, and he likes to throw a 40-pound pack on his back, and he feels in touch with God of his understanding. And I like to do other things. I'm like busy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sponsor a lot of women, and I do a lot of things. And what we've learned to do is let each other go. And you go be the very best Dave you can be, and you go be the very best Polly you can be. And I'm really grateful that we can do that today. That today we know how to love each other. But I'm so grateful to the people that taught me how to do it. Because before coming here, I had not a clue how to do it. And I have been given this wonderful gift. And I want to treasure it, and I want to nurture it, because it's valuable. To be able to be married to another person and to love that person with all your heart is truly, truly a gift. And I'm so grateful for that gift. I need to tell you about my two sons. When I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I realized that my 14-year-old son was a full-blown drug addict. And it was rooms like this and people like you that said, "Polly, you suit up and show up, because you may be the only big book James ever reads." When I was 6 1/2 years sober, my son called me on the phone and he said, "Mom, I want what you have." And 6 1/2 years before, he did not want what I had. 6 1/2 years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school. And he said, "Don't you dare show up at my school, because I am ashamed of you." And 6 1/2 years later, he wants what I have. The miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that my son now, on January the 3rd, 1995, celebrated 11 years in this program. But I want to tell you about number 10. You know, I don't know how much you think sobriety is a responsibility, but I'm here to tell you, in my opinion, to be a sober member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a responsibility. This is a program of attraction. You never, ever know who's watching. And I may be the only big book anybody ever reads. And the 12th step of Alcoholics Anonymous says that I am to practice these principles in all my affairs. You know, it's really easy for me to be wonderful around you guys. It's really easy because it's safe here and you love me. But sometimes it gets really tough when you get out there amongst them. And it's really important that I be a representative of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I have one of these round circles and a triangle on the back of my car. That's all I have, but I have that. But there are people who know what that means. And you know, if I'm driving down an L.A. freeway, flipping people off, they probably don't believe that Alcoholics Anonymous works. It is a responsibility to be a sober member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I do not take that responsibility lightly. At 10 years of sobriety, I was able to give my son a 10-year cake at my home group, which is Monday night Seal Beach speakers meeting, and it is the most awesome meeting on planet Earth. And I hope you feel that way about your meeting. And my son got up behind that podium and he said, "My mother was the big book I could not read. And for that I'm grateful, because that's what you told me to be." My son today is married to another member of this fellowship, and I'm grateful for that. My oldest son is not an alcoholic. I wish he were a member of Al-Anon, but he's not. But I've also learned that that's okay too. But Russ was a person who was just desperate inside. And he didn't drink and use drugs, but what he would do is he would hurt himself physically. And he was very depressed. And I understood about that because I am also a person that has suffered a lot of depression. And I have tried to take my life on numerous occasions. So I understood what that devastation was. And I understood what it felt like if you could just cut your arm with a razor instead of having to feel the emotional pain. I understood his devastation. And I would watch my son try to take his life 6 times. And I was devastated. And you see, hindsight's 20/20, because you guys would tell me, Polly, turn him over. Give him to God. But you see, my God wasn't big enough. I knew that God was big enough to get me sober, but I didn't believe that God was big enough to take care of Russ. You see, I didn't trust God, because I was afraid if I gave Russ to God, that God would take him. And I didn't want him to do that. But when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And I got to do something like I'm doing tonight, except that it was co-ed. And I was to be the Saturday morning speaker. And my daughter-in-law called me on the phone Friday night and told me that my son was in the hospital one more time and that he had put a pair of scissors in his stomach. And I was devastated. And when I got up to talk that morning, I just couldn't hold it together. And when I got through talking, this man came up to me and he said, young lady, you and I need to talk. And we need to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we need to read the chapter to the agnostic. And you need to know that God either is or he isn't. He is either all things or he's nothing. And that Russ is God's kid. And what God does with his kids is none of your business. And with that man's help, I was able to release my son. And I want you to know that's over 7 years ago. And my son has not tried to hurt himself in 7 years. And for that, I'm grateful. I wish I could tell you that Russ has this gloriously happy life. I think I know the answer, but he didn't want to hear it. But that's okay. He doesn't hurt himself anymore. And for that, I'm grateful. And I have had the opportunity to sit in the therapy office with both of my sons and listen to them talk about what it was like to be a little boy and have me for a mother. And you know what I got to do that I never could do is I got to listen. And I got to validate their feelings. And I didn't have to say, you shouldn't feel that way. I got to say, I'm really sorry that that happened to you. And make their feelings real to them. And you taught me how to do that. Because without you, I would have needed an excuse. I'm so grateful that I have had that opportunity. I'd like to tell you about a gift that was brought to us. On May the 23rd, 1993, Ryan David Klinger Lee was born. And he's my grandson. And you know what I found out? I found out why you have kids. So you can have grandkids. It's awesome. He's my main man. He's got a sober mom and dad, and he's got a sober grandma and grandpa, and he doesn't ever, ever, ever have to see us drink. About 4 months ago, we were given some news, and at first, none of us thought we could live through it. It was so devastating. We found out that Ryan's deaf. And, you know, one more time, it was that perception thing. It appeared to be the worst thing that could possibly happen. But you see, it's only my perception, and there's just no negatives in God's world. And what we've learned is just how truly special Ryan is. And our entire family is learning sign language. You know, I always wanted to be bilingual. And it won't be long before I am. And I have more respect for the deaf community than I've ever had. And what's really funny is talking about that internet I was talking about with Penny. They have DeafL on the internet. And we talk to all the people who have deaf kids and deaf grandkids. And we learn about what they're doing. And it's a beautiful, beautiful language. And I'm so grateful that Ryan has given us that opportunity. And here was a family 17 years ago that was in total destruction. And here is a family now that gathers up together in universities in Chicago and in California and is learning to sign because we need to communicate with this beautiful little boy. And it's a miracle. It's an absolute miracle. And one more time, we're getting the blessing. And what's happened is I've always had the blessing. The only thing is, I didn't know it until I found a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. I want this program to be just like it is right now when Ryan grows up. Because, you know, I think he's going to need you. And I'll tell you why. You see, when you're a little bitty baby and they run a bunch of tests on you, and he had to have a bunch of tests before they could come up with his diagnosis, they had to put him to sleep. And so the third test around, they're putting him to sleep. And the first time they give him the anesthetic, nothing happens. The second time they give him the anesthetic, nothing happens. The third time they give him the anesthetic, he finally goes out. And when he comes to, he's doing this. That means more. So take this fellowship and treasure it with your life. Because it is the thing that saved my life. And I definitely wanted to be here to save Ryan's life, should he need it. If you'd have told me to make a list of all the things that I wanted in sobriety, I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me the things that he's given me. I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me a husband like Dave or friends like you. And you see, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to me, I would have settled for so much less. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to my own devices, I will self-destruct. The very best I could do for me was to get me pronounced dead on arrival. But thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, you have breathed life into me. And tonight, I am the woman I always wanted to be. Because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I am enough. I am enough, and I always wanted to be enough. Tonight, thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I am useful, and I always wanted to be useful. I am a woman who is self-supporting through my own contribution, and I've had an opportunity to do something this past 2.5 years that I never knew I could do. You see, I believed with all my heart that men were put on earth to take care of women. That's what I thought. And because of you and what you've taught me, I have been able for the past 2.5 years to be the primary breadwinner in my family. And I just didn't know I could do that. But thanks to you, I can do that. I didn't know that I could love one man with all my heart for 14 years. But thanks to you, you showed me how to do that. And you have taught me how to suit up and show up for meetings. And you have taught me about commitment, responsibility, and accountability. And for that, I am grateful. But the place that I felt the most failure was that as a mom. And thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, my sons have given me a gift beyond my greatest expectation. My sons have told me I am the mom they always wanted me to be. And thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I would like to have me for a mom because you have taught me how to do that. When I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not have a God of my understanding. And I didn't have a God until I was 5 years sober in the program. And thanks to you today, I will never, ever walk alone. I have you, and I have God, and I will never, ever walk alone. When I was in Center Hospital, one of the counselors used to start every day with a prayer. And I end my AA talks with it because it's what this fellowship means to me. I sought my God, I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three. God bless.